It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama back on the Gulf Coast for a two-day tour. Then, tomorrow night, addressing the nation on what's being called the biggest environmental disaster in U.S. history. Down on the Gulf, on the sea, on the shore, people are already living the disaster. We've seen the birds in oil. This hour, On Point, we go to the Gulf for the human toll of the unending Gulf spill. You can join the conversation. What are you hearing from the Gulf Coast? What have you seen with the Gulf full of oil? What is the future of the Gulf states? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New Orleans is Chris Kirkham, reporter for the Times-Picayune. Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
The president, we just heard in the news on Air Force One, headed down your way. What's the expectation? What are people wanting, hoping for?
I think they're just asking for a strong show from him and sort of a strong message toward BP. And I think he's showing that he's going to do that. And particularly with this claims process, making this an independent account that the government will have oversight on. I think the real issue is that the moratorium on drilling is become a very big local issue here, particularly just because so much of our economy depends on these jobs, and particularly these coastal communities where they're both being impacted by oil, but the moratorium has this potential long-term impact of shutting down a lot of jobs.
That's interesting. You had James Carville saying over the weekend, take away fishing and take away oil and drilling, and you'd got not a whole lot left in the economy there, especially if the beaches are tarred. But oil drilling got you into this trouble in the first place. Are people torn about it, or they just want to get back to work on the rigs?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I mean, you said it right. I mean, the two bases of the economy in these coastal communities are fishing and oil. And, you know, for decades, there's kind of been almost a symbiotic relationship between the two. A lot of fishermen go back and forth between oil field jobs and the fishing industry. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a time of reckoning right now. I think a lot of people are coming to grips with this. But for people who have families or, who work in the oil field right now, I mean, I think, there's this question where, certainly you'd like to see reforms and safety, but right now that translates into no income potentially or jobs moved elsewhere.
Chris, we've seen the oil on and in the water, including very deep in the water, of course. We've seen it on the beaches. But what about the evidence of the economic distress that is hitting this Gulf Coast region? What do you see if you travel that Louisiana, and then now at this point, right on across Mississippi, Alabama, even into Florida? What's the evidence that it's hitting home?
Well, I think definitely when you're talking about, say, some of these coastal towns in Louisiana, like Grand Isle and Venice, that are really big fishing destinations for the world. I had one of the marina owners tell me the other day, he's in Grand Isle, and he was saying basically, we don't have weekends anymore. And that was,
what do they have?
Yeah. I mean, they basically have, media coming in and taking some boat rides. It's giving them
No weekends because there's no work in the first place. So there's no work week. So it's all just,
basically he said, every day is the same now. We're just dealing, we're dealing with this every day. And the weekends, for these mm-hmm. charter captains, that was it. I mean, they had people coming from all over the country to take these high dollar trips and that's gone. And
what about the commercial sort of larger fishing boats and shrimpers? What portion of them have been turned into, skimmers and oil cleanup service boats?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's really hard to tell. I mean, there's a lot of them who, I've seen just still waiting at the docks for calls from BP. So, I mean, I would say definitely less than half of them have been hired at this point. you know, there's a real frustration there because, you know, I mean, they're watching this oil come in, and it's, you know, I mean, this is their livelihood, and they're basically not able to go out and do anything about it. And I mean, in South Louisiana, you know, there's a very kind of I don't know, almost wry approach to living there. I mean, it's kind of on the edge.
You're in the first place.
Right, right. You're exposed to the elements. You know, hurricanes come through all the time, and so. But these are people who really sort of get after a problem and really want to fix it. And I think that's been the most frustrating thing right now is there's this kind of paralysis almost in these communities where you know the infrastructure is fine, their boats are ready to go, they've made the investments, but they just can't go out on the water, and so they're just sitting on the sidelines as this disaster unfolds.
And looking at a disaster that the origin of which is still exploding down under the water, and the end nowhere in sight. I mean, we've heard such apocalyptic kind of renderings about where this may go over time. Here's a little bit of your congressman and Senate candidate, Charlie Mollison, down there. It broke down at the House Energy Subcommittee on the Gulf Spill last month.
Our culture is threatened. Our coastal economy is threatened. And everything that I know and love is at risk. Even though this marsh lies along coastal Louisiana, these are America's wetlands.
And you can hear the emotion right there. Chris, there's a lot of talk this week about BP and its $10.5 billion dividend, whether that ought to be in an escrow account. The president will speak about that. But, I mean, what are people imagining? That BP will put its global oil profits to work for months, years, decades to support this region?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a lot of cynicism. I think there's a feeling that ultimately they won't. That this will sort of get lost in a lot of litigation, and you know, really any of the benefits will, you know, could be decades out. And so, you know, I think the real issue right now for the president is that you know, you have the situation where basically every failure of BP, every snafu that happens, is then directly reflected back on the president because there's the feeling the president needs to be doing this. And then, you know, one of our other congressmen here, Steve Scalise, from the New Orleans area, he keeps saying basically the president and the federal government need to be carrying out this recovery. BP just needs to write the checks to pay for it. And I think that's a common feeling here is that, you know, when you're going around Grand Isle, I haven't been turned away a lot of times, but there's just a feeling that BP is really controlling a lot of the situation as far as the contractors. They aren't able to talk because they say they're under orders from BP not to. BP saying, well, we never said that. But there's just a feeling that BP's presence is everywhere, and I think that's frustrating people. And so when they don't see the president, you know, acting strong enough, you know, then. That's the challenge. So I think he's going to need to show. And I think this escrow account is probably the first step of that attempt.
BP presence everywhere, but solution nowhere. And the president 2 days on the Gulf this week, and then a speech from the Oval Office. Chris Kirkham with the Times-Picayune in New Orleans. Thank you very much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's get down right on the coast itself. Joining me now from Orange Beach, Alabama, it's a coastal town between Mobile and Pensacola, Florida, is Tony Kennan, mayor of Orange Beach. Mayor Kennan, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. We really appreciate it.
What would we see if we looked out on your beaches today?
The remnants of an oil slick that came ashore Friday night and Saturday. And you shouldn't see it. It should have already been cleaned up, but that hasn't happened.
And what are you looking at as this slick spreads? We've all seen the maps. It just gets bigger and bigger out there on the Gulf. What's your vulnerability?
Well, our beaches are going to get hit. We've pretty much accepted that fact because the assets are not in place to take care of it along the shoreline, nor did they do their job at the wellhead. We have a pass called Perdido Pass. It's our inlet or outlet from the Gulf of Mexico to our backwaters and our sensitive areas. That's our primary concern. But it has one of the swiftest currents on the coast, and we really can't do anything except try to stop the surface contaminants from coming through. But if the oil is submerged through the water column, I don't think we can stop it.
The blowout was a huge, huge, unspeakable error in the first place. But at this point, in terms of responding to it or cleanup or what you see coming, how do you grade what's happened, what BP has done and hasn't done, what the government's done and hasn't done? How do you grade it?
F minus. I don't think any of us down here that own a business would ever run our business the way this operation's been handled. Keystone Cops, I mean, you can use all the old cliches that you want to, and they all fit. No one in charge, no pit bull, you know, out there directing traffic. I would have asked for every vessel from the four corners of Earth to be on site the second day just in case. Every innovation that's come through this tragedy to be on the shelf ready to use. I am so frustrated. It's unbelievable. Lack of assets, arrogance, disengagement by the president, over-regulation, interference by the federal government. If they're not going to help us, then just please get the heck out of the way and leave us alone.
So where does this go, Mayor Kenan? If oyster beds go away, fishing is off limits for maybe a long time, tourism takes a hit, and even drilling itself, of course, is under the gun here, where does that leave the economy of Orange Beach?
Yeah, our economy is devastated now. I mean, we are a tourism city, and we have 12 to 14 weeks to make our annual revenues. The first 60 days of the summer, we essentially make 100% of our cash flow for the year, and that's shot. Our whole way of life down here is threatened, not just the ecosystem and the environment, mm-hmm. but our community, the way of life, the ability to, we're not national chains. We are mom-and-pop shops, generational, family-owned, family-oriented. They don't have deep pockets. They can't survive, 6 months or a year before they might see some type of cash infusion. And, it's beyond sad for me. I am angry. I'm spitting mad. How could this happen?
How long do you think you're going to need support from BP or you name it? 6 months, a year, 10 years?
Until we get back to 100% of where we were prior to this incident. That's BP went on the national stage and made the statement, we're going to make you whole. For 4.5 weeks, I've asked every VP, executive, vice president, and I've asked Mr. Suttles himself in a face-to-face meeting, please define what the term make us whole means.
Tony Kenan, mayor of Orange Beach, we're out of time before the break, but we wish you luck, and we appreciate you being with us today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the toll of the BP spill on the Gulf Coast and its people. Special welcome to listeners at WWNO in New Orleans today and right across Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. The pain came quick and early. Here's Billy Anderson, father of one of the 11 who died in the original explosion.
We can clean up pelicans, we can clean up fish, and they will live. They will continue to live. We cannot do that for our family members we lost. We can't wipe the oil off of them and wash them with soap detergent and get them back.
And now the losses mount. Those were straight-up casualties on the rig. Now it's into the economy. Last week, NPR's Tamara Keith interviewed oysterman Mitch Jurisich on a boat near his beds off New Orleans. Mitch had to shut down his operation because of oil-filled waters.
Sad part is all my life I've been out here, so I never wanted to do anything else. And I'm not a welder. I'm not nothing. I'm an oysterman, But
tell me what we're seeing.
We're looking at oil, red-looking, fudgy oil, and it's disgusting.
He's an oysterman, but that's not working right now. 800-423-8255 is our number. Joining me now from Atlanta is Latasha Brown. She's an advisor to the Gulf Coast Fund, makes grants to grassroots organizations in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas. She spent week after week working with people watching the oil spread on the Gulf. Latasha, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
And with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Kurt Isink is executive director of the Louisiana Workforce Commission. They handle Louisiana's workman's compensation, unemployment insurance, workforce development. Kurt Isink, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tom.
Latasha, give us a sense of what you've seen traveling back and forth along the Gulf as the oil's washed in.
The Gulf is my home, and one of the things I think is kind of getting missed in the media is the social impact that's going on and the human impact, that there is a face to this disaster. And communities after communities are facing, there's health implications that we are not hearing about. We're hearing of people all along the region in different areas that are actually getting sick. We don't know, have concerns about the dispersants. There's a group of fishermen that we were meeting with a couple of days ago that when they were spraying the dispersants out of the air, you know, the dispersants got on some of the fishermen, and there was a lot of concern in terms of the health implications of that. We're seeing in terms of psychological impact all across the region where fisher families that their entire livelihood and their way of life is based on the fishing industry, there's a tremendous amount of psychological impact on the families. We're hearing from people who have really concerns about suicide and concerns about an increase in domestic violence and some of the usual things we see when there's a psychological kind of breakdown, when people are under tremendous amount of stress.
Do you think this region is going to survive this, Latasha? I mean, if people can hunker down, but is there something to hunker down to if you've got, you know, the oil business on pause, fishing sort of out of bounds now, tourism in trouble? How do you deal with that?
You know, I think that's the overall question. Fortunately, we're dealing with communities that are extremely resilient, but this is a lot. You know, a lot of these communities, what we also have to understand, that a lot of these communities are just starting to kind of get back on their feet after Katrina. So you're seeing a tremendous amount of stress and concern around the region. And there's some cultural issues as well in terms of there's a group that we met with, the Atakapa Indians, who live on the water in Grand Bayou, that their entire way of life from hundreds of years and living on the water and working on the water, but it's their life, it's their culture, is actually being impacted and may be erased because of this issue. So I think there's twofold. I think on one hand, you know, there is a tremendous amount of resilience from the people in that area that have overcome a tremendous amount of stress and pressures from hurricanes, from a variety of issues. But I think on the other hand, it does beg the question, how much can these communities, how much can they take, how much can they handle? And the response, I think we also, in this narrative of what's going on in the region with BP, part of even what I heard on the clip that you just played, mm-hmm. you know, is that there are pieces that are being lost. We got to make sure that we're connecting it to the human implications, and there is a human face to this disaster.
Kurt Isink, BP says it will make operations whole. Do you see that happening?
No, not yet. Not by a long shot. First thing is businesses have to be able to stay open. And it's been weeks and weeks now. BP still has yet to give us a list of those large business claims. We've heard from businesses who have started to fail or have failed already while their claims were in the pipeline. That in no way is keeping those business, making those businesses whole. But you asked a good question about how do these communities survive. They are extremely resilient. But the first step to carrying them through this crisis is that those who are immediately and directly impacted by the spill need to have the first opportunity to go to work remediating the spill and cleaning it up. And that, to our knowledge, has not happened to a sufficient extent. We're still hearing stories about boats from other states coming in and doing the work. When we have vessels of opportunity signed up, the people on those boats are trained, ready to go to work, and they're not getting called. That's just one example of something that could happen to carry these communities through, and it's not happening well enough.
What about on the work? You're in charge of workman's comp and unemployment. I mean, is BP sort of porting cash right into you at this point, or what's the relationship there? Have they opened up their treasury to the state of Louisiana?
BP has made some grants to the state of Louisiana to cover things that are not otherwise covered through the normal claims process. But there are a lot of things that the state of Louisiana has asked for that have not been properly funded, such as dredging to build sand berms to block the oil, because it's much easier to clean oil off of sand than it is to clean it out of the marsh. Those kinds of things are pending. The claims operation, though, I cannot overstate the importance of that claims operation working properly. And it is operated by BP, funded by BP. It is the lifeline for these communities during this immediate crisis period, and potentially for a longer period. Every day I start my day by looking to see if the oil is still coming out of that well. Mm. And the longer that oil comes out of the well, the the longer the questions will linger about what the ultimate impact is going to be, how long that aid needs to continue, and what's going to really drive the long-term recovery for these communities. And we know that the recovery is going to be long-term.
Well, it's your region, but the whole country is watching. We saw, here's a few days ago in New York, protesters dousing themselves with dirty water outside a BP station in New York City. Saying, BP, your heart is black, you can have your oil back. But there's mixed views on that. Here's the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, on WOR Radio's John Gambling Show on Friday, defending BP, pushing back on calls for the CEO, Tony Hayward, to resign.
The guy that runs BP didn't exactly go down there and blow up the well. And what's more, if you want them to fix it and they're the only ones with the expertise, I think I might wait to look assign blame.
Kurt Isink, you know, BP's board meeting today to think about that $10.5 billion dividend and where it ought to go. What's your assessment of how BP's done overall? Kurt?
I don't think there's any question about the quality of work that they've done. The mayor gave them an F. I would say that their performance has been poor from how things have been handled at the wellhead, not having a plan to deal with the blowout, to not having a plan to deal with the fallout from the blowout in any real significant aspect. It's very, very shaky at best. And we have people now who are at a loose end, people who are doing everything BP said to do to maintain themselves and their families and their communities throughout this deal, who are not getting who are not plugged in the way BP said they would be. Now, I know there are people at BP working extremely hard. We've met with some of those who are trying to rectify this, but we had to take them to court to get information on what they're doing, and we still don't have that information.
Let's get to our listeners. Ryan in Smithfield, Rhode Island. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up here, and I want to put economic conditions on the side for a moment and really take a minute to think about the safety of the people in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast. And, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, people sitting on the sidelines not really having work to do. Mm-hmm. But what preparations are going to be made, you know, for an area that's going to be devastated by hurricanes in the upcoming season? I know you guys talked about it on the air earlier on in the month, and, you know, the conditions that the oil is going to cause for these hurricanes. And even, you know, I believe the Almanac even says this year is supposed to be bad for hurricanes. But
yeah, the prediction is for a high number. Who knows exactly what force, but a big number certainly. Latasha, what do you hear? Ryan's looking on from up north to down south and worrying about the season that's in your lap now.
The tragedy of this is many of the organizations, and there's a lot of networks that have actually been focusing on this season and getting prepared for the hurricane season, and here comes along the BP oil spill that just takes it to another level. And I think what we're seeing now, people are stretched beyond, particularly some of the community organizations and NGOs that we've been working with around the region, they're stretched beyond capacity in terms of what's the best way to prepare people for what's happening. We're getting calls where folks are not sleeping at night, days and days they're not sleeping at night. They're worried about the impact of the oil on the water column with the dispersants in the water column. They're worried about that coming ashore and what does that mean to a lot of the people who actually live off the, you know, while we're talking about the fishing industry, many people, they live off the fish and the food that's coming.
Actually
from.
Consume those fish. Eat it, put them on the table.
They actually consume those fish. Mm-hmm. So there's a major issue. One of the things that's really come to the forefront in terms of what we're hearing from people, even more so than preparation for the hurricane season, has been the immediate health impacts. They're not getting information from BP. BP has not been honest and forthcoming in terms of what is the impact of the dispersants. They have not been forthcoming in terms of anything really related to this. So we're hearing all across the board from communities that are really concerned about some of the health impacts of the BP oil. But also there's another layer with the preparation for hurricanes. That water comes in inland. What does that mean as well?
Let's go to Daryl, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Daryl, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hey.
I just don't understand how, with the resources that these people have available to them, how they can be so incompetent as to exceed the flow that was coming out of that riser when they finally got something to work. I mean, they had to shut the flow down because the boat didn't have the capacity. I mean, somebody's got to take charge here and get this thing straightened out. I mean, these people are obviously not what's best for the community down there, the people down there. They're concerned about their profits, and that's their only issue. I don't understand why we haven't. I know we can't stop everybody's production, but it stops some of their production minimally until they get this problem resolved.
Daryl, thanks for calling. Kurt Isink, it was pretty shocking when we were told for a long, long time 5,000, you know, and then suddenly it's 30,000, 40,000 barrels a day coming out of there, and not the capacity, as Daryl says, at the surface to even deal with that oil if they could, if and when they got it up. You heard Thad Allen say that he wanted to see BP step it up. Do you see the capacity somewhere on the horizon coming, or near, you know, to do that? Are they ready to do more, do better? Are the materials there to respond?
That's such a tough question. Getting information out of BP has been one of the greatest challenges for us since day one. That's why we took them to court and filed suit in Plaquemines Parish, to just to understand what's happening with the claims process and get the information on it. We want to know what they're doing with local hires so that the people who are affected have a bridge to the end of this thing, to come out of it whole. The vessels of opportunity people and cleanup crews, we're pushing people into training, but the training hasn't helped them get hired. Those are the kinds of human issues that we're looking at, and I think that's symptomatic of what we're seeing across the board on the response from BP. We've had trouble getting boom in. The boom that was requested weeks and weeks and weeks ago, a lot of that still has not arrived, and I'm sure other states are having the same issues. So no, the capacity to deal with this has not been there. I think that's been probably the clearest thing we've gotten out of this.
Let's go to Rachel in Muscatine, Iowa. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was wondering what people in the rest of the country can do to help.
Simple as that. Latasha, what do you say? There's a caller sitting in Iowa watching the mess down there, and what can she do?
There are several things. The Gulf Coast Fund actually has set up some of the people who are on the front line are the community organizations and the NGOs that are on the front line. A lot of those communities, they're actually going to those people. So there are several things I think that people can help. I think one concrete way that you can help is you can go online to our site, to www.gulfcoastfund.org, and get information about what's going on. But also there's an opportunity to really be able to contribute to a Gulf Coast Recovery Fund that we've established, that all of the resources are actually going to the community groups and the fishermen community, so that they can organize and for legal advocacy work that they're doing, and actually kind of organizing their resources to really be able for the communities to be able to respond to that. That's one way. A second way, I think, is really staying on top of, we need external pressure. This is a national disaster, and this has to be treated as a national disaster. Although it's regional in nature in terms of geographically mm-hmm. where it took place, mm-hmm. it's a national disaster. So we need to put pressure on the president. We need to put pressure on Congress. Everything needs to stop in terms of people making this a priority. We need this to be a priority in terms of holding BP accountable. Part of the frustration, the major frustration with people in the community, has been BP has been operating almost like a super state, as if they're more powerful than even the federal government. And people are very disturbed about the way that the leeway we've given BP. We've been very concerned about how much leadership we've been taking from this disaster in terms of, or yep. not getting from this disaster from BP. So that's another way that you can help as well.
Keep the political heat on. If I may get one call from New Orleans before the break, Latasha. Michael, in New Orleans, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'd like to let everybody know that there is enough time in the day to assign blame at another time. I have friends of mine that are out of work from this disaster.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring every resource to bear. I don't care if that's the president, and I believe our governor has it right. We need everybody with a boat, everybody with a bucket, and everybody with a good idea. And we need them down here. We need them right now.
Do you see that being organized? Is that kind of pull everything together going on, Michael?
Unfortunately, it's not. We need a strong hand. We need a strong hand. If BP is inept, let them be inept. Let them help, and let them ultimately pay. But we have enough time to worry about who's responsible and who's going to pay what bill later.
When you say your friends are out of work, what would you have them do? Do you want to put them to work on recovery, on cleanup?
We'd let them do anything. Let it be. Hey, nobody down here has idle hands. We're ready to go to work. It's unfortunately, these boys need to be paid. There are resources that need to come to bear. We need boats. We need skimmers. We need dispersant. We need everything. Where is it? What's going on here?
There's the question out of New Orleans. Michael, we appreciate your call very much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the toll of the BP spill on the Gulf Coast and its people. Kurt Isink is with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's executive director of the Louisiana Workforce Commission. They handle workman's comp and unemployment and a lot that is right in the middle of what that state, among others, is now facing. Latasha Brown is with us. She's with the Gulf Coast Fund, been all across the Gulf in recent weeks, joins us today from Atlanta, Georgia. Here's Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nungesser in Washington last week saying the job of fixing the spill, protecting the Gulf, is just not getting done.
Somebody's got to step up to the plate and say, I'm in charge, get the hell out the way, and we deploy everything physically possible. Anything short of that is unacceptable. I haven't done my job. The president has done his job. And the Coast Guard hadn't done their job until we do that. Until we can look that camera in the eye and say we're doing everything physically possible, and we're not at this point. We're not.
We're not at that point, and the days are clicking by. Chapel Hill, Tennessee. Colleen, you're on the air, Colleen.
Yes, sir. I just turned off a C-SPAN and was starting to listen to NPR while I was just coincidentally rebagging some of the shrimp that we got down from Terrebonne Parish in South Louisiana, which is where I'm originally from. But when I heard Mr. Melanson, I started breaking up the same way he did. Now, I also have some questions, if anyone can ask.
Okay.
You know, answer them maybe. One is, are they trying to really stop this leak, or are they really just trying to siphon it? Okay, that's one question. And the other question is, like I said, I'm originally from Terrebonne Parish, a place called Baie du Large, a little settlement south of Houma there. Is there western waters of the Gulf still open for shrimping and fishing right now, or have they closed them also?
Colleen, let us try and pick those up. Kurt, first to you. I know you're not a fishing specialist, but you must have been watching the map pretty closely down there. Generally, what's open and what's closed at this point?
Generally, the western areas are still open. There are some areas on the east side open too, but the closures are pretty much around the toe. And that whole area from Barataria Bay, some around Terrebonne Bay, and up around, heading eastward, and up around the mouth of the river, the Chandeleurs, those areas have been closed for some time. One thing that you talk about the toll in the area, a point that I don't want to get lost in this, is the deep water drilling moratorium and the effect that that's going to have. You know, there are, as somebody said earlier, there are families where one brother may be fishing, the other one works offshore. Maybe the fisherman in the off-season goes offshore, too. We have a balance between those industries in Louisiana, and we're bearing the brunt of what happens. We provide a huge share of the seafood for the nation. A huge share of the energy for the nation comes through here, too. To shut down both of those is catastrophic, absolutely catastrophic.
But you can't expect people to eat poisoned seafood.
Absolutely not. No, in fact, we've presented a very extensive seafood safety testing program for BP to fund, over $400 million for 20 years. We're adamant that nothing unsafe will leave Louisiana.
Right.
So that if people buy Louisiana seafood, it will be safe.
And what do you say to people on the other side of that equation who say, well, yes, we understand you need the jobs of deep water drilling, but deep water drilling has just sunk the boat here.
But to just say for 6 months we're going to shut down that drilling, that is not acceptable to us, because the rigs will close up and people will leave. Those jobs will leave in that period of time. There has to be a better way. And what we've proposed, Lieutenant Governor has a website up there to talk about a 30 days to go inspect those rigs and to step up the inspections. And as they're safe, open them back up. And then long term, any changes that need to be made can be made. But to just shut down that whole industry for 6 months will be catastrophic. Safety is paramount to us, too, but there's a better way to address it.
Latasha Brown, how do you see the long term here? A lot of people, are pretty concerned at this point about deep water drilling when we look at the cost that everybody's paying right now. And yet a lot of jobs hinge on that down there.
I mean, as they should be. I think this is a question of conscience for the nation as well. I think I agree with Kirk. I think it would be catastrophic for the next 6 months, because the oil industry and the fishing industry have kind of coexisted and been the economic base for the region. I think that is a tremendous challenge that we've got to address immediately. But I do think that long term, we do have to examine the nation's overdependence on oil, and we've got to think about what are some other strategies.
energy strategies that we need to consider so that one region is not as vulnerable as our region has been. We've time and time again, the petrochemical industry and its presence in the region, while on one hand it has created a tremendous amount of jobs, on another hand it has created an environment where there have been some health concerns. Mm-hmm. It has created an environment where there have been environmental justice issues all across the region. There's a portion of the region that's even known as Cancer Alley. So I think that ultimately I think it's a very, very difficult question and one that we should have been working through all along, but now we're at due date.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we're at the day where, one, I do think that it would be catastrophic to shut down the industry at this point, but I also think that there's a larger question about the nation's dependence on oil and utilizing that this part of the region supplies a tremendous amount of the energy needs of this nation and what kind of impact that has had on the people in the region.
Yeah. Let's get a call from Duxbury, Massachusetts. That's oyster country, too. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've just got a couple of suggestions about what things that could be done right away. And the first thing that I would do if I were President Obama was to order the immediate stopping the use of dispersants.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, you're taking a one-dimensional disaster and turning it into a three-dimensional disaster. The second thing, suggestion I would float out there, no pun intended, is to start bringing down wood chips, sawdust, peat moss, and start spreading it out on the oil, out on the water.
Yeah.
I really feel like that would be a method of taking up the oil once the sawdust is covered the oil. I think it could be collected a whole lot easier than just trying to suck it up with pumps. And,
but you've got a kind of organic approach there. And when you say stop the dispersants, are you speaking as an oysterman, Bill?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
What's your worry there?
I think the oil, the dispersants will cause the oil to just sink down to the bottom, get on the oysters. Get into the water column. The fish eggs and larvae will just be killed, absolutely devastated. The tuna fish industry, you know, the tuna fish spawn down there,
mm-hmm.
right where that oil spill is.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two places in the world that the bluefin tuna spawn, and the Gulf and the Mediterranean are the two places in the world.
Bill, let me get a view from a boatman and a shrimper right down on the Gulf, and I appreciate your Duxbury oysterman's perspective here. Joining us right now from Bayou La Batterie, Alabama, is Joey Rodriguez, boat builder, shrimp boat owner, operator. Mr. Rodriguez, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
You hear the oysterman there calling in to say stop. He would want to stop the dispersants right away.
I agree with him fully.
Why?
Well, the dispersants, like somebody said earlier, is making it a three-dimensional problem. Now you're putting that all in the columns of the water. Now how do you remove it? You know, now you're going to be affecting everything from fish to oysters to shrimp. For how many months or years are we talking about before we got a safe product again? I think that oil should be left to come to the surface where it can be gotten to. They ought to have every skimmer available, recovering and removing it and getting it out of the surface. How are you going to skim it out of that column of water a half a mile deep?
But why do you think they've gone so heavy? Why do you think they've gone so heavily for dispersants? I mean, we hear BP's bought up a huge portion of dispersant from around the globe to inject in those waters.
Because it covers up the problem. It masks it off the surface of the water to where it don't look so bad from satellite and airplanes and all that stuff. But that is not the fix. I think they're going about this the wrong way altogether. They need to let the oil come to the surface, have every skimmer available, all the sawdust, whatever they can, and gather and get this oil out of the water. Don't put it in the column of water. Now you're affecting everything for months and years to come.
You're a shrimp boat owner, and you know the operators there. What percentage of those boats have been converted at this point to skimming and sopping it up?
Well, my brother has two 90-foot Gulf shrimp trawlers that he's owned and operated now for anywhere from 13 years. The latest one's like 7 years old. I got one that's about 14 years old, 90-foot Gulf shrimp trawler. My two brothers' boats are on payroll with BP, on quote-unquote standby payroll. But to my knowledge, I think one of them just left the dock today. And I don't know what they're going to do with the shrimp boats other than they're paying these guys that could be out there making a living to do something else, and that's good. I'm in favor of BP employing people and paying people, even though some of them might be just sitting out there under an umbrella on a boat watching the boom float. As long as they're paying these people that could be making money anyway, I'm in favor of that.
When you and your brothers...
There's any professional boats out here that are set up for skimming and removing all, sucking it off the surface and stuff like that. You know.
When you and your brothers look out at the future and the shrimping business, what are you thinking? You know, maybe in a year we'll be back, 10 years? I don't know.
That's my biggest concern. I was president of Southern Shrimp Alliance a couple of years ago when we were involved in the tariff against all the imported shrimp that come in here breaking our trade laws. But regardless, it's going to be a major concern for some time, even though our shrimp is an annual species. It comes and goes in 12 months' time, so to speak. So we may have only lost next year's crop in that particular area. I don't know. I'm not a marine biologist. I don't know the long-term effects. I just agree with your caller earlier that the oil does not need to be put in the column of water to hide the oil. It needs to be gotten up.
And finally, Mr. Rodriguez, what do you need from BP to make it through, and are you getting it?
Well, I think for the most part, the majority of the shrimp boat owners and operators and oystermen and people that are involved in making their living that are now being disturbed because of the oil spill, BP seems to be stepping up to the plate with very good faith efforts, trying to at least get these people making as good, if not better, a living than what they was making. So everybody's kind of content and quiet as far as the money income's concerned. BP seems to be doing a decent job. It's the long-term effects on our fishing industry that we're yet to see, and what BP will have to do in the coming months and year in the future, we'll see.
Joey Rodriguez, a boat builder and a shrimp boat operator in Alabama, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Let's get a call from New York, Bridgehampton, New York. Sarah, you're on the air, Sarah.
Thank you. I just wanted to encourage people, even the president, to potentially bring an injunction against BP to prohibit the distribution of that dividend and apply it to this disaster, which will then have the effect of bringing shareholders to bear on this disaster.
That will get a lot of shareholder attention in a hurry. Sarah, thanks for calling. What about that? The president's going to be for 2 days along the Gulf and then speaking from the Oval Office. What do you hope to hear from him, Kurt? Do you think he should put the heat on BP to stop the dividend distribution there, $10.5 billion?
I think the key thing for us is that BP puts the money up front so that nobody has to go fight about it later on and decide, should BP have paid for this or not? I think that there needs to be no question at all, no equivocation by BP that all of this is their responsibility. We're looking for a statement from BP still that the moratorium and the effects of the moratorium are their responsibility, so that there's no question about who pays and nobody's at risk other than the entity that's responsible. But certainly the paying a dividend is to people who are when this is going on and BP has yet to live up to all of its responsibilities, that's a terrible move.
Utkarsh in Boston. Utkarsh, you're on the air.
Hi, I had a question about the escrow account that has been set up by the president, and I was wondering if Kurt in particular could tell me if any of the local authorities have any say in how this has been set up and what the contributions are going to be specifically that BP is going to make. What my question basically is that, is this going to be a bad surprise that comes out later, and you know, there still need to be pieces that need to be picked up because, you know, people on the ground didn't have their say when they had a chance.
Yeah, good question, and thanks for it. Our time's getting short, but I guess this escrow account, Kurt, is not a done deal at this point, but the president may be pounding the table for it tomorrow. He's meeting with the chairman and CEO, both of BP, later this week.
And I hope he's extremely successful with that. But I can tell you that the parishes in Louisiana have had trouble at times during this to get funding from BP to do what they need to do, because they don't have a lot of cash flow either. Just like a lot of these businesses don't have cash flow, this is a prime earning season for the businesses. It's to the extent that they don't earn any revenue, that's going to affect tax revenues for local and state government also. And so we're going to see some long-term impacts, and these are also impacts that BP needs to cover, so that to the extent that state and local governments need to address gaps in response or additional response areas, that there's actually funding to do that.
Latasha, I want to come to you. One more call from Badeville, Alabama. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for having me. One thing that I've noticed is in a lot of the broadcasts, people are wondering,
what can I do as an American to help out with the situation?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that one way to do it very effectively is for people not to be afraid. Go down and help the tourist industry by taking a vacation on the coast. There are plenty of things to do on the coast besides just stand on the beach and watch the waves roll. I think that would help quite a bit if we would just understand that and maybe reroute our vacations to a different place.
Steve, it's a great suggestion. It's a beautiful and rich part of the country, and you're right. It is much more than just the coast. Latasha, what do you think?
I think he's absolutely right. I think it's a wonderful idea at this point. People and the region need support, and that tourism is a beautiful part of this country, and the tourism industry, particularly in the States and in that region, it needs people to come and support. And I also encourage you all to look for organizations to support as well that are on the front line that are doing the work. The Gulf Restoration Network, there are a series of organizations you can go to. Again, I can direct you to our website, www.gulfcoastfund.org, and you can get information on some of the organizations that we have been supporting that are on the front line that are doing great work that need support as well.
Kurt, how many years do you think you're going to be looking to BP for support? I mean, it could have raises the prospect of a whole region whose economy is blasted for a long time. Could this be decades?
It certainly could be decades. If you look at just from the fisheries perspective, we've certainly lost one season. We might have lost multiple seasons for different species because of the effect on the spawning, which we still don't know details about because the oil's still coming. Then you look at the moratorium. To the extent that there are impacts on the drilling, which is another huge mainstay of the region, that could go on forever. So, no, BP's responsibility will extend well into the long term. The recovery we're looking at is long term. It is years.
This is going to be quite the saga to watch, and we wish everybody very well in it. Kurt Isink, Executive Director of the Louisiana Workforce Commission, joining us today from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Kurt, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Latasha Brown with the Gulf Coast Fund. She's been up and down the Gulf, joins us today from Atlanta, Georgia. Latasha Brown, thank you for your time today as well.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.